Mike Gillis, the former general manager of the Vancouver Canucks, and a guy who has gotten to know the Sedins over the year, a guy who will be at the ceremony tonight, joins me now on the line. Mike, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm well, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and as you know, this is a day of celebration, one that we've all been anticipating for quite some time. How would you describe your feeling heading into tonight's ceremony?
Older. I'm super excited for these two guys. I think they're wonderful people and great athletes and great hockey players, but more importantly, they're terrific people, and it's nice to see them honored in this way.
What was your impression of the Sedins prior to arriving here, and how did that change once you got to meet them?
Well, I had represented players on the team, and so I had a pretty good understanding of how people were thought of. And the one striking thing was that the public perception of Daniel and Henrik back in those days didn't match the internal player perspective on the team. The guys on the team thought the world of them, thought they were great players, thought they were leaders, really thought highly of them, but public perception at the time wasn't quite the same. So when I got to know them, or before I came, I had a pretty good understanding of how the other players on the team felt about them. And when I arrived, I found exactly the same thing. I thought they were just great players and great people and had lots of untapped potential left in them. And they were competitors. They wanted to win.
You and I both know it was received in a way that I don't believe you intended at the time, but at your introductory press conference, you were asked about the Sedins, and I think you kind of matter-of-factly said, well, we got to figure out if they're first-line players. I'm not sure. When were you convinced of that, Mike?
Well, I was convinced that we could win with them very shortly thereafter. When I saw how they conducted themselves, how they arrived, the condition they arrived in, the respect that they generated, we quickly came to the conclusion that if we could surround them with players that could elevate their game and be really complementary, that they were definitely first-line players. But, there isn't one player that can carry an entire line for an extended period of time. You need to have those pieces. And with those two, clearly, they had played together their entire lives. They knew each other better than any other two people possibly could. And if we could find that third member of that unit that could add, not just watch, but add to their play, we were really confident that they would continue to improve and get better and definitely be top-line players in the league.
Former general manager of Vancouver Canucks, Mike Gillis, with me this morning in advance of the Sedins' retirement jersey tonight at Rogers Arena. You've been around a lot of great hockey players. What do you consider the most unique trait of Daniel and Henrik?
Wow, there's a lot, there's a lot of unique traits, but I always think they're the only two twin brothers that I think have existed in professional sports that have reached the status and stardom and that they have. And, playing with your brother the whole time is just incredibly commendable that they managed to figure out how to complement one another and bring out the best in each other. And, there is an internal competition among those two that is there every day, every minute of every day. And they used it to thrive. And I think it's such a unique story, such a unique perspective that they bring to it that it's remarkable. And that has done nothing but impress me.
After your first season with the Canucks, you had a pretty big decision to make contractually with the Sedins. How difficult was that in terms of presenting an offer? Because it's not just one star player trying to keep at the time, Mike. It's two.
Yeah, well, we had worked at it with J.P. Barrie for quite a while, and J.P. and I had known each other for a long time, and we're friends. And, you know, it was never a situation that was adversarial. We understood we had to pay them the most we could afford to pay them, but if we wanted to have a competitive team, we had to pay them at a level that would allow us to go out and get other players and keep players that were currently on the roster. So for us, it wasn't a decision about keeping them. It was a decision about how do we keep them and create a competitive team, one that's capable of competing for the Stanley Cup. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do in a hard cap system. And, you know, it's great. Yeah, you have two great players, but you're not competing. You're a marginal playoff team. You're not really, you know, going to make any noise or win playoff rounds. And, you know, our mandate was to win. So we had to figure out a way to fit both of them into a cap system, you know, together, and then have the resources to build around it and do other things. And they understood that. So, you know, most of our discussion, it didn't center on do we want to keep them or not keep them. It centered on how do we keep them. And when we had our opportunity to really talk to them about the circumstances and tell them what we were trying to do and tell them where we were trying to go with the team, they bought in totally, and they gave us the flexibility to do that.
Yeah, they most certainly did. And while they have always been cognizant of the fact that they are compensated handsomely to play a sport they love, we all know that if it had just been about the money for the Sedins and they just wanted to go to free agency, they could have made more. Put on your agent hat for a second. Could you hazard a guess as to how much more money they could have made?
Well, I don't want to guess because, you know, market conditions are what they are. It would have been difficult for other teams to fit them in as well as a package. You know, I think the cap was $59 million at that point in time, maybe even lower. I'm not sure. I can't recall. But it would have been difficult for other teams to do it as well and be competitive. And, you know, we knew they wanted to stay in Vancouver. We knew that they wanted to compete for a Stanley Cup. We knew they wanted to be top players. And so what we had to do was figure out how to try and get them there while we could afford other players. And they were great. I mean, they not only did they take less money to allow us to do that, they then turned around and gave away a bunch of it to Children's Hospital. So I don't think you can say anything more about their willingness to give back to the city of Vancouver and to make it work for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and for me, they are, and I imagine they are for you too, the greatest Canucks of all time. They took every bar that had been set in this franchise's history and they raised it, didn't they?
I believe so. And you know, when you have players like that, you have the opportunity to push other players that are really good players down your lineup and match up against more inferior players. And, you know, when we began to figure out ice time starts and how to maximize their opportunity offensively, they certainly rose to the occasion and did everything in their power to make us the best team that we could be. And, you know, very easy to work with. They understood it. They got it. It was a great time.
Did they ever do anything that exceeded your personal expectations for them on the ice, Mike?
Well, I think when you win back-to-back most valuable player trophies in the league, they're different players. Like, they did it in different ways, but the ways complemented one another. So I think getting to that level didn't surprise me, but did surprise me given the level of competition and other players that are in the league. So, you know, to do that, I think, is a remarkable feat. And I guess that's probably the only thing. They did exactly what we thought they were capable of doing and more. And they did it on a daily basis. So I think those two Hart Trophy wins were probably the one thing that exceeded my expectations.
You know the level of discourse in this market, the level of scrutiny in this market, and things like captaincies are debated all of the time. Was it a difficult decision when you were moving on from Roberto Luongo as captain to choose Henrik?
Sure. It was really difficult. And we had to be in our minds, and we probably overthought this, how one would react if one was chosen and the other. And it was literally a toss-up between the two of them. Elaine was an instrumental voice in thinking about how we were going to do that and what we were going to do. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it worked out fine just because they're such honorable people and there was no jealousy or any hint of jealousy or unhappiness. You know, they're genuinely happy for one another when they accomplish things. And we had overthought it for sure. They didn't think of it the same way we did. And, you know, it worked out great. We could have chosen either one. We told them that at the time. So it was fun.
Mike Gillis with me this morning on Sportsnet 650. Is there an on-ice memory, Mike, that to you epitomizes the Sedins or is the most vivid one you have of them as players?
Well, no, there were so many, but, you know, there were just times when at the end of a shift that where they had controlled the puck for, you know, 30, 40 seconds, where they would just do something remarkable and put the puck in the opposition's net and you know, I guess we became a little bit immune to it because we got used to seeing it so often. And, you know, when you play with the puck on your stick in the National Hockey League, it doesn't matter who you are, you're a target. And those guys played with the puck on their stick all the time. And, you know, it's remarkable that they could do that without injuries for the most part, playing all the time, showing up for every practice, being at their best daily. Like I said, I guess I became a little bit immune to the greatness, but when you got used to seeing it and then came to expect it, it was a pleasure to be part of.
It took this city longer than it should have to truly appreciate the Sedins, and the hockey world took even longer than that in general. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, you know, hockey is often reluctant to recognize changes, recognize different features. There was always this underlying current of dislike for foreign players. Let's start with that. And then Swedish players, and then, you know, on and on it goes. And there were people that would openly speak about those things. And, you know, I think that there was opportunity for people to disparage, not just them, but others that fell into those categories, and it's unfair. And I think it took some time for people to appreciate it. I mean, you still see, even though the changes in hockey have been profound in the last 10 to 15 years with respect to fighting and how the game is approached and different things, there's still an element of, this hardcore fan that wants lots of fighting and lots of hitting and pushback and scrums and all that stuff. And for the most part, those people have never gone in the corner and gotten a puck themselves. So, you know, it's just part of evolution, I think. And I'm thankful that those days are behind.
What impact did the Sedins have on you personally, Mike?
Well, I came to appreciate who they are as people, and just the level of integrity and accountability they brought every day. Like, they didn't shy away, they didn't run away, they didn't accept responsibility when the team didn't perform as well as we had hoped. They took it upon themselves to be leaders for young players, to be leaders when someone arrived on our team. They did everything you could possibly ask and more. Their family efforts in the community have been outstanding. I don't think there's one thing you can point to that they haven't been complete and absolute professionals about. And to me, it was an honor being part of it and watching it and trying to help them
achieve their goals. It was great.
And I imagine it'll be an honor to be a part of it tonight. What went through your mind when you got the phone call from them and they asked you to be here?
I was thrilled. In sports, things never, there's rarely any fairy tale endings to anything. And for me to have them ask me to be part of it, I was deeply honored. I truly thought that they epitomized the type of team that we were trying to have, one with integrity, that played hard, showed up, performed at exceptional levels. And I'm honored to be asked and was honored at the time.
And certainly that'll bring back a lot of memories of 2011. Do you look back at that team now, Mike, and the way the game is currently played, and you mentioned some of the rule amendments that have occurred over the years, and think about how that team was ahead of its time?
Do I think about it? Not often. We were doing things that some of them were born out of necessity because of geography and travel and different things, and we were also really committed to helping our players be the best they could be, whatever that took. And the game that those guys played and the team that they led played entertaining, fast hockey, really fast transition, puck control, puck possession hockey. And I guess it was foreshadowing for what was to come. But at the time, we just thought it was the thing we had to do with the players we had. And there wasn't some grand scheme about changing the game. It was, this is what we have. So we need to build on this and make sure that we have this throughout our lineup. And that's what we tried to do. So I thought it was pretty entertaining hockey. I think most of the people in Vancouver thought it was pretty entertaining hockey, and we got great results. So you can't really complain about it too much.
No, there's absolutely no argument there. We get texts still, we get tweets still, hey, Mike Gillis should be back in the game. Mike Gillis should be with an NHL organization. Where's your appetite for that here today in 2020?
I'm not sure. I think that I really believe that the evolution of the game is acute, and we're in a place where technology and analytics and different elements that I was quite interested in are being utilized and more utilized and developed. And I'm a firm believer that the historic model of an NHL organization has to evolve along with all of this other technological advances in particular that are available. And whether that means that the historic role of GM or assistant GMs is changed and altered, that has interest for me. I think that organizations need to be really well developed with the right people. And I'm not really keen on going into a situation where it's just more of the same and you're taking up space and there isn't really opportunities to advance and work with like-minded people. In the event an opportunity comes along where it's really forward-thinking and opportunistic and titles are less meaningful, but production is more meaningful, I have interest in that. And I've spent a lot of time trying to learn about it and think about it, not for the purpose of another job, but for just my own interest. And I've come to some conclusions about where I think it's going to go, and that's exciting. So, if that opportunity occurs, then I would be interested. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm pretty happy learning about more of this stuff and seeing where it's going to go.
Do you see any progressive enough organizations out there, even though they might be in the minority, that would interest you?
I think there are some that are trying. There's still a lot of floundering around, and the use of the word analytics is probably misused most of the time. But there are certainly teams in other sports that are
are really advanced when it comes to physiology and maximum player performance and using technology as tools to advance player performance. And, you know, I don't think anybody has it completely right, and I'm not sure you could ever get it completely right, but there are certainly teams out of necessity that are advancing quickly. They're moving the needle quickly, and it's interesting stuff, and I think that there's lots of applications to professional sports in North America, but, you know, some teams in the NFL are doing remarkable things. In the NBA, they're doing remarkable things. I think Major League Baseball and hockey are still a little bit behind in some of these categories, but, you know, once they see the value, they'll try and catch up quickly.
I tend to agree with your assessment there, and hopefully in the future, Mike, we can have another conversation. I'd like to explore that further with you. It'd be great to see you tonight at Rogers Arena. Thank you very much for taking the time again today.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure.